who stands up, lifted us up to a very high place already. Welcome to one and all. I'm delighted to see you. So happy that we can be gathered here today. I see many old friends, and I suspect that some are coming for the very first time. And whether you have come many, many times or whether you are coming for first time, you are all equally welcome, and this is a circle in which all are welcome, whether man or woman, old or young, of whatever persuasion, of whatever race, of whatever religion. We gather together beyond the differences which divide us and unite in that which unites us. And that which unites us is a deep call to the spirit, a call to remember, to walk the path of love, remembrance, service, and glorification. And that is why we come together whenever we can. Many have come here from far away, but we've been drawn like a magnet to each other, to this moment, to this chance to unite in reflection, in meditation, in prayer, in music, in community, in the act of drawing together in the light of the One. Throughout these days, we will have the chance to turn within, in silence, to speak together, to pray together, or break bread together. And you will be hearing from teachers of the Unity Path, who will share from the fruits of their years of journeying on this path. And I trust you will each bring to this gathering the fullness of your own life story and the depth of your own communion with that sacred truth which lies at the heart of our shared existence. In the days that now begin, I would like to speak with you about a few sentences of Hazrat Pir Murshid Inayat Khan, who brought the Sufi message to the West in 1910. Sentences which reflect some of the most fundamental principles of the Sufi path, and indeed, I would say, of the very path of union with God, irrespective of all denominational labels, because in truth, all paths converge in one ascent to the truth. And so I've gathered together a little collection of sayings. And whenever we meet like this, I plan to bring forward one of them. And this morning, the saying that I have in my mind is this, that the body must be considered as the sacred temple of God. We began with such a joyful opening when Ustad Saab sang, and as he sang, I think you saw, we all saw very clearly, he didn't only sing with his tongue, sang, his whole body was singing, his limbs were singing, his eyes were singing, his hair. Every limb, every organ, every cell was singing. There is the sacred temple of God. There is the body, animate, alive, channeling something sacred and powerful. And that possibility exists for all of us. And yet, we see that the body is not something that is always attuned. It is not always a direct channel to the source. The body is also a sum of aches and pains, sometimes a dull and weary thing. And so the body is a question for us, an opportunity for us. What is it? Where does it come from? Does it define me? What does it tell me about myself? What potentiality does it possess? Is it a means to enlightenment, or is it an obstacle? Or both? Whatever we may believe on this subject, perhaps we can all agree at the outset that the body must be considered. Before even completing the phrase, the body must be considered the sacred temple of God. Let's just begin with the words, the body must be considered. We can't ignore it. It must be considered. Although oftentimes we do so fully take it for granted, so utterly disregard its meaning, its origin, its essential needs, that we don't consider it at all. And especially at the beginning of the path, we are reminded, we are urged, the time has come to consider it. In fact, in the path of purification, the first step is the purification of the body. Afterward comes purification of the breath, then purification of the mind, and finally purification of the heart. But it begins with the body itself. So, let us consider the body, let us reflect on it, look back over its history. And when we do so, we see that it has transformed before our eyes. Of course, the eyes themselves belong to the body, so that which gazes upon it itself is changing. And if we could recollect the time before our birth, we would discover ourselves in a body that bears very little resemblance to the body as we know it today. First a single-celled organism, and then a kind of amphibian unfurling in the womb, organ by organ, beginning with the organ of the heart, all of the limbs and organs being extensions of that primal organ. Something is knit together in the womb, in the safety and generative presence of the womb. And it bears remembering that the word womb is in Arabic rahm, and from this we derive the fundamental divine names, Rahman or Rahim. These divine names come from that original sanctity, that generative compassion in which this body was engendered. And so in the midst of such nurturance, this weaving together of form occurred in the space of 9 months. And some look upon the progress of the body in those early months and thereafter, following birth, and see a recapitulation of the very fluorescence of life on earth, beginning with single-celled organisms giving rise then to fish and amphibians, at last mammals. The baby first crawls, but in time stands upright. So the story of our bodies can be seen to summarize this evolutionary thrust in which all life is participating on earth. It is recapitulated in the individual life story of each of us, in the very development of our physical form. A baby is born from its two parents, born from the mother by virtue of the insemination of the father, which means that two bloodlines have converged, and the mother and the father, herself and himself, represent the convergence of two bloodlines, and so it goes. And therefore, our body represents a conversion of the lifeblood of humanity, an intermingling generation after generation. Through all of these couplings, this body has been produced as the concentration of the preceding embodiments of so many lives. Therefore, when we consider bodies, we have to understand them not in isolation, but rather as the continuity of a, you might say, river of lifeblood. It flows through our veins, it will flow through our descendants, it is one human life continuing through all of these manifestations. So when we look upon ourselves in the mirror or observe others, at first it may seem that our embodied form distinguishes us. This body constitutes the recognizability of our ego, and therefore it serves to separate us from the world. And yet, look deeper, and immediately you realize that it unites us through the bloodline, through our kinship with an ever-widening community of people, As far back as you trace your ancestry, so wider is your kinship circle. And if you go back to the very earliest times, you'll find that there is no human being on earth who is not your cousin, because our ancestors are the same. And if you would go back further still, then you would see that all living beings, all organisms, are your brothers and sisters. You're all the differentiation of one life. And our body itself confirms this. The body which seemed at the surface, the principle of distinction, in fact, confirms our deep unity with all of life on earth. But to confirm this, we need not only look back in time, back over the generations. We may equally look at the ongoing operations of the body day by day. And what is clearly apparent when we do so is that the body requires ongoing sustenance. We have to drink water every day and eat at least every few days. And even passing one day without food is not easy. One feels it because this body hungers constantly. Why does it hunger? It needs replenishment. Why does it need replenishment? Because it is not a monolith in isolation. It is completely confluent with the surrounding world of life. And so, each meal is in fact an act of communion. Each meal bears witness to our interrelationships with all, our kinship with all. Whenever we eat, we are taking in plants, animals, living matter, and we are availing ourselves of the potent energy of the sun. Part of considering the body means eating consciously. This is part of purification, the purification of the body. To let each bite provide a chance for remembrance, remembrance of the flow of life moving through our bodies, coming from the earth, returning from the earth. It requires the participation of so many orders of being to produce even the simplest fare, even bread and water. It requires the united efforts of plants, animals, human beings, the elements, the turning earth, the light of the sun, order of the galaxies. So we're continuously renewing the body, and at the same time cells, old worn cells, are shed. As a snake sheds its skin, and in the course of just a few years the entire matter of the body is recycled. So this body, which seems a solid thing that separates us from everyone else, is in flux. It's like a riverbed, which the water of life is flowing, it's constantly renewed. You look at a river and you think you see a river, you think you see a body of water, but that water is changing constantly. Every moment it's a new river. Every moment this body is a new body, constantly our body is really the principle of our participation in a dynamic, transformative, relational, interdependent world, which is itself one dimension of the multiverse of numerous transformative generational dimensions whereby the divine life emanates into time and space. Principle of participation and an opportunity through that participation to witness. So we begin in this awareness that our physical existence is a great opportunity. It is ephemeral, constantly changing, and at last this particular organization of matter will no longer hold, and yet whatever is in it will not be, cannot be lost because it migrates. It's already migrating out of us into innumerable forms, and that migration will be absolute in our death. And yet the elements live on. Matter reorganizes itself in so many instantiations. These molecules will fly free in the sky, will dig deep into the earth, and life goes on, and the earth sends up new shoots. So what is death then, except the transformation of what is already under constant transformation? To consider the body is to watch the body. Yes, intellectually, but also, if one is following a contemplative path, contemplatively, which is to say, not only thinking about the body, but entering the body's inner life through the finer faculties of feeling. And these are the very faculties that we are enabled to refine and revivify when we begin to treat our body as a sacred temple, which means practicing purification, avoiding intoxicants, whatever deadens the senses, whatever leaves the body in a state of dullness. Marshall speaks of how intoxicants stimulate the nervous system only to leave it afterward collapsed and dulled. So the avoidance of intoxicants and the pursuit of a diet which is balanced and life-giving, such that the inner channels can flow. There are traditional principles that provide guidelines, but perhaps what is most essential is for each embodied person to observe the effect of different kinds of food, drink, and recognize what produces vividness and what causes the diminution of feeling. So practices of care in one's diet, treating this body as a hallowed space, a sacred space, recognizing that the diet, what we eat and drink, represents our ongoing communion with the surrounding landscape. And so our choices are significant ones, impactful ones. That which we take in enters us and becomes part of this flesh and blood, becomes who we are physically. What do we wish to contain within us? And those decisions have an effect on our state of being, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, and also an effect on the surrounding landscape. When the environment is poisoned, our bodies are poisoned, and when we poison our bodies, the effect is external also. So, recognizing the body as a sacred temple is part and parcel of recognizing the earth itself as a sacred planet. Our participation in the earth is embodied in this physical form. So the path of purification involves eating and drinking what is pure and wholesome and good, balancing repose and activity, balancing speech and silence, learning stillness. In this way, purification of the body can lead on to purification of the breath, purification of the mind, just learning to be still. Of course, when we do so, then you notice what is amiss. If anything is amiss, it declares itself. Soreness in the body, soreness in the mind, soreness in the heart. And since that soreness is uncomfortable, the tendency is to resist such a silence, resist the stillness, and jump up and distract oneself. But then a chance is missed. So, stillness of the body opens up a space of attention that leads to finer realms. And what one will find is that attention to the body, far from contradicting the intention of spiritual consciousness, consciousness of spirit, attention to the body opens the door to ever finer sensations which reveal further bodies, or you may say, deeper strata of this body, culminating in pure spirit. And so to attain to spirit, you need not throw aside your body, but rather you may, well, still it, enter into its subtler workings, sink deep down, observing the rhythm of the breath, observing the rhythm of the heart, then sensing the subtle fluctuations of electricity and electromagnetism. Light, subtle sound, which is a process akin to a child's discovery of dolls within dolls when a child has a Russian doll, a wooden doll inside the first is a second, inside the second is a third. They become smaller and smaller as you open each doll box until you come to the very interior. And yet here, each successive body is finer and yet vaster. And there's no discontinuity, it's a continuum from the most external, palpable aspects of the physical form right back to that pure, undifferentiated, traceless transcendence. It's a glide. You glide back into the body and open that space to move between realms of embodiment and disembodiment. Then the physical body can be what it is meant to be, a sacred accommodation, a temple, a space for glorification. I think in life, sooner or later, it is inevitable, whether in this world or beyond, it is inevitable that we will all come to the realization that life is for this purpose, to glorify, to exalt the one whose life flows in us, flows out and in again. Sooner or later, we will realize that everything else leads toward that realization. And then, when we look upon the body, we will see a chance, an opening, in order to bring the glorifications, the hymns and psalms of the angels right down into earth, water, fire and air. To be in clay and of the spirit. That this body is animated knowingly by that light that floods the universe. It basks in that light. It responds to its promptings in all of its gestures. When it looks, it sees that light. When it speaks of it. It's a pliant body, responsive to promptings of spirit. And then, while it is ours to wear, it becomes the vehicle for glorification, service, and love. And when the time comes to surrender it, it's like the removal of a layer of clothes. Layers underneath those two would be removed one by one until at last what remains is that pure simplicity that pervades everything. close our eyes. You're sitting in a chair, and the soles of your feet are on the ground. Let yourself feel that contact. Wherever there's contact, it's the encounter between the life within and the life outside, the clay of your flesh and the clay of the ground, earth speaking to earth. And when you feel the contact vividly, then the distinction between what is within and what is without blurs. The boundary between self and other blurs. There is just earth. Or when you breathe, the sky outside enters you and fills the sky within. Air speaks to air, and at last it is only air. Likewise, fire, likewise, water. Elements pour into you, pour out, and within all of the elements is one quintessence that doesn't even flow because it is pervasive, pure space. And that is the essence of every contact. So you feel your soles on the ground, if your feet are on the ground, if you're sitting on the floor, feel your tailbone. Press down. Tracing up from the tailbone, mount up the vertebrae one by one, up the spinal column, atop the spine sits the skull, and at the top of the skull is a place that was very soft in the anatomy of a newborn child, the soft spot of the fontanelle, the highest point of the body. Opens out to the sky. You can sense the vastness and spaciousness of the sky above. Meanwhile, you feel the density of the earth below. Between is the straight vertical line of the spine. Up and down that line, energy flows. denser energy of the earth rises up and is rarefied, and the subtler energy of the sky descends and is this is the space of the heart, where opposites meet. From the heart, all of the organs and limbs have grown out. The lifeblood of the heart circulates through all of the limbs and organs. Feel your legs and your hands and even your head as extensions of that central core, which keeps up the rhythm of your life as the heart beats. Let all of your gestures, all of your senses, all of the extensions of your body be tendrils of the heart itself. Now, an old saying goes, the spirit rides the body, and God rides the spirit. This anatomy is the vehicle of the spirit, which works through the heart, and the spirit itself is the vehicle of the one divine life. Hence, our intention is to rededicate this body to the workings of spirit, purify it, consecrate it, redirect all of its motions toward the promptings of the spirit, so that in the spirit, God's will be done, and in the body, through the spirit, God's will be done. To enact this intention, Moshe has given these words, recited on two movements. The first movement is to turn the head first to the left shoulder, the left knee, the right shoulder, like a circular motion from left to right, and we say, make this body your temple, O God. And the next movement is to descend down from the right shoulder into the heart, bring your face down toward the heart, and say, and let my heart be your shrine. Body and in the world. fast, breathing in through the mouth and out through the mouth, five times, conscious of air in your body.